The KJS Show, Sundays on Kofifi FM 97.2.
Our guest is a jazz pianist, composer, and author who introduced the first university jazz course in Africa. That was in the year of 1984. And established the internationally famous Center for Jazz and Popular Music on the Durban campus of the University of KZN. And throughout this time, you know, he toured internationally, leading professional and student groups, playing with some of South Africa's top musicians. And together with his wife, Catherine, they wrote a memoir about their 23 years in South Africa. Of course, Playing the Changes, which is also a documentary, examines why and how jazz had such a transformative role in different societies such as post-Soviet Poland and Mandela's South Africa. The documentary is coming to our shows and you and I get the front row seat. From the he's live in the UK. And of course, I'd like to say hello and welcome back to South Africa and welcome to Kofifi FM 97.2, Darius.
Well, hello. Thank you. Thanks for that intro, Gwako. And yes, and I love the idea that I'm talking to people in South Africa because that's what, you know, drove this whole thing, both the film and the book. They are distinct. It is not a movie of the book. But they cover the same thing, the creating the Center for Jazz and Popular Music. And it actually links. It's interesting that you mentioned Poland in the introduction. My last gig in London, that was actually Saturday night, was at the Polish, it's called POSC, the Polish Social and Cultural Center, which was really an emotional gig. It was a complete sellout, and you know, I'm happy to say I felt I played well, the band played well. And the film begins with some footage of me in Poland. You'll be surprised. I'll get this to South Africa, but it sounds like we're not going there, but we are. It starts in 2018 when I'm doing a tour that was in a way a recreation of my father, Dave Brubeck's 1958 tour of Poland. And he was the first American jazz musician with to go behind the Iron Curtain, which was a big deal in those days. And maybe you and most of your listeners don't remember that. But the Soviet Union, at the end of the Second World War, had created an Iron Curtain around Eastern Europe, places, Poland, Hungary, what's now the Czech Republic, and so on, Bulgaria, a lot of countries, Romania, they were behind the Iron Curtain. So it was a big deal for Americans to go behind the Iron Curtain. This was interesting enough for a filmmaker to want to film it. And filming started there. And there was a discussion, well, where are we, meaning my wife, Catherine, and I, where are we going next? And the answer was going to South Africa. in 2019, and that was the 30th. It's great the way numbers play a role in this. So the 60th anniversary of some, actually the thing about 1958, I was 10 years old. That was the first time I appeared on stage because, and I hope this isn't too much of a sidetrack, but you'll see it relates. It was the first time I appeared on stage because the Polish promoter wanted to prove that Dave Brubeck was not afraid of bringing his children. My brother Michael was with me at the time, and wife to Poland, that we didn't consider them enemies, in other words.
Yeah.
You know, despite the antagonism in both directions, as people, as, you know, individuals and artists, there was no enmity, there was trust, right?
Yeah.
We did. And so that's what happened then. Mm. And in 2019, that was the 30th anniversary of founding the Center for Jazz and Popular Music on the campus of what is now called the University of KwaZulu-Natal. So that started in 1989. So there's a symmetry there, the 30 years and the 60 years. And the film follows us, and the filmmaker interviewed many people on campus and off campus. And this documentary just kind of grew. It took on a certain amount of momentum, and it really covers our time there. But I hope that the message that comes through, because it may not seem like it, but after a while, I get tired of talking about me and hearing about me. But I can be a point of view, a point of reference for important things that happened in history. And we were there during the apartheid era, during the transition. We were instrumental in changing the culture on campus and more widely, really, in Durban. What we were doing at first was against policy, in some instances, even illegal. And by the time we get to the middle of the 90s, what we were doing that we were not supposed to do became what everyone else was supposed to do. We became the model.
Wonderful, wonderful account. And I think you've answered quite a few of the questions almost chronologically in the way that I had them, in fact, intended to ask them. But I really want us, you know, for the benefit of our listeners, Darius, you know, to reflect a bit about the life that Darius lived before. You know, I mean, almost immediately when one says Brubeck, you know, a lot of people think about your father and his contribution to music, you know, and through his work, you know. But for you, as Darius, how have you managed not to be, I suppose, or navigate not to be compared, if there was any, anyway?
Well, that was something that changed through my life, throughout my life, you know, as I matured and different things opened up to me. But no, I think overall, what I've learned is that I have a legacy and a heritage, and instead of running away from it and overdoing efforts to differentiate myself, okay, use this. Not everyone is born with those opportunities, you know, with a hit. I can play at the end of every concert. I can play Take Five and people go away satisfied. I certainly learned a lot about the craft of just, you know, not even just the specifics of music, but what a musician does, how, you know, about rehearsing, touring, etiquette, talking to the press, talking to media, meeting people, involving audiences. All of that is part of that heritage. And I grew up at first as a young child thinking that music was just the natural thing to do because my grandmother, that is my father's mother, was a pianist, classical pianist, of course, because different generation. And both of my father's brothers were musicians. And it seemed my father's closest friend, who was Paul Desmond at the time, famous alto sax player, he came over to the house and they would, you know, play together and rehearse and work on things. And I thought Uncle Paul was my real uncle, you know. And yeah, and the heritage thing goes on. I'm playing this summer or later this summer toward the end of June, beginning of July. I'll be playing with my brothers, Chris and Dan. Chris plays bass and trombone. My brother Dan's a fine drummer. I'll be playing with them at something called the Brubeck Jazz Summit at Lake Tahoe.
Yeah.
In Nevada. It's up in the mountains. And that is a summer camp that, besides giving concerts, we invite really great teachers and really talented young people. And they get exposure, they get, you know, mentoring for a week. It's just a solid week of lessons and jam sessions and,
wow,
and concerts.
Mm.
And, you know, so it's family ties in with everything I do some way or other.
I think you just summed it all up. In fact, you know, when you say family ties in everything, because it's a legacy thing. You know, Kofifi FM, we are in conversation this afternoon with Darius Brubeck, and we have been talking about his book, Playing the Changes, his documentary, Playing the Changes, including reflecting on some of the most interesting moments on his timeline. Now, let's take you back to KZN for a moment. And, you know, it is a typical Saturday at the famed Jazz Jaw at the Moon Hotel. You know, what were some of those activities that you guys got up to then, you know, with everyone that was interested in now this newly found jazz, I suppose, euphoria in the air brought to you by the lessons that they have now come to be a part of? You know, take us back to those days, you know.
Jeez, were you there? You look too young, but were you?
No, I wasn't. I would have loved to be a fly on the wall, though.
Well, the Jazz Jaw began, okay, first of all, I have to give a shout out to Ramol Bagwandin, who was the owner, is the owner of the Moon Hotel. And it was, again, we have to remember it was the bad old days. So it was a place that was kind of on the border called Clarewood, which was a sort of what they used to call a gray area. And the Moon Hotel always tried to have jazz and always tried to have mixed audiences. And he welcomed the idea of the Jazz Jaw. The word Jazz Jaw, the concept actually comes from my wife, Catherine. And the reason for it is that we had students, some of whom became very famous, like Zim Nkawana, Johnny Mekwa, Melvin Peters, Victor Masondo. They were students at the time, and everyone was struggling financially. And we had to figure out ways of raising funds. And the Jazz Doll was held in the name of Ronnie Madonsela, who back in the day was a very famous jazz singer in the Durban area. He was considered maybe the best in South Africa as far as like straight ahead male vocalist singing, kind of in the, you know, blues and jazz, straight ahead stuff on big band music. He was great at that. So we had the Ronnie Madonsela scholarship, and we raised money for it by involving practically everyone who could play in a big band, which was really something, quite unusual, you know, five saxes, four trombones, five trumpets, big band, smaller groups. I played with the teachers who were there. Some listeners might remember Mike Rossi or Chris Mertz from the States, who came to help me. And the slogan on the handbills that were handed out, then there was no internet, or effectively there wasn't. You know, maybe the army had the internet, you know, but not ordinary people. So there were flyers. They were, you know, just pieces of paper. All students would go around sticking them under people's windshield wipers, you know, in their parked cars, and leaving them in stores and shebeens and bars and wherever people were going. And they would say, hurry, hurry, jazz and curry. And Ramul had this, big room, and he'd put out a buffet of Indian food, right? And, you know, and that was the scene, and it would just go on for hours and hours, and, great music.
Yeah.
And a great vibe.
I wish I was there. I think I was born much, much later after the Hurry Hurry Jazz and Curry. But whilst watching the documentary, Darius, you know, Catherine accounts, you know, on the documentary anyway, about how other white South Africans, you know, ridiculed her and called her names for what I would say liking, you know, black people.
Yeah,
how did you overcome that together?
You know, the short answer is we ignored it. We didn't fight back. We just acted like we didn't hear it, didn't see it, didn't care. You know, so the main thing is you maintain your dignity, you maintain your own point of view, your own principles, and sometimes I would get angry, but we tried not to show that. And anyway, we were, as I said, we were kind of breaking the rules all over the place. And what I thought was really encouraging, I'll try to emphasize positives, because really, you know, we were very fortunate in having a lot of goodwill on our side too. Mm. The main thing that happened is that, you know, people would say, oh, well, you know, we'd like you to play in this venue, but can't you find some white musicians to play with or something? And I would just ignore that. Show up maybe with Sandile Shange, Bongani Sokela, whatever. And then the ball's in their court. Okay, what are you going to do about it? Here are people who are paying to see Darius Brubeck and his band, whoever is in the band. So you can just tell them to all go home and I'll go home, or we could have a show. And usually it wouldn't even be that confrontational. It would be like, okay, let's see what happens. Well, the sky didn't fall. There wasn't a riot. There was no fighting. You know, nothing bad happened. And those, a lot of those apartheid rules had to do with fear.
Yeah. Yeah.
That if, you know, if you just let things take their course, there'd be no control, there'd be no discipline, that, you know, there'd be antisocial behavior. But you very seldom see that with jazz.
Mm.
You know, it wouldn't be like soccer hooligans. You get audiences that are, you know, knowledgeable, respectful, and they all dig the same thing, and they all become. And I can take this back to Poland too.
Yeah. Yeah.
They become a network of people who on a cultural level have found something in common, and they start to trust each other. Mm. Now that's the serious point. I was being a bit facetious before, but networks of trust are really what society depends on, and that's what changes society.
Mm.
In Poland, it was illegal to even have a shortwave radio to listen to jazz from overseas. But then the people who did, they had to trust each other, right?
Yeah.
Because they were doing something that was wrong, according
together.
To
the,
yeah, together. So one could tell on the other, get the other person in trouble. But then how did you know? Oh, well, you were doing it too. Now you're both in trouble.
There you go.
and eventually, the jazz scene in Poland came to represent democracy. Mm. And in a similar way, the jazz scene in South Africa, and I have to mention also the Rainbow Restaurant, as you may have seen in the documentary, if you got to see in advance, it represented non-racism, you know, and not even in a confrontational, aggressive sense. It was just people behaving naturally. It was creating a zone of what South Africa really could be like.
Mm.
And eventually did, in fact, become.
Yeah.
With black and white audiences, black and white musicians. And you used the perfect word. I wish I'd used it in the book. The jazz euphoria in the air.
Yeah.
In those days, that was exactly it. It was euphoria. It was somehow feeling we were manifesting the future now. It wasn't just possibility, it was actuality.
Yeah.
We were living it. We were demonstrating it. We were enabling it in an atmosphere that could only be described as euphoric.
Let's talk about the screenings now, you know, Darius. I know we've got a few South African dates, both in Johannesburg and Cape Town, and you do have something in Durban specifically. Tell us about that one.
Yeah, it's called The Music Imbiza. It's not specifically to do with jazz, but it's a series of events in August 27th through 30th in Durban. And Encounters, again, isn't specifically to do with jazz, but it's a festival of documentaries.
Yeah.
So actually, the film gets screened under two different, you know, sort of categories of being a documentary about the period of time and about the music.
Mm.
I would say an important reason the book and the film are not identical or not the same is that within the book, we do sketches of musicians, of people, tributes, especially to, you know, people who are gone now. Barney Rachabani, Johnny Mekba, Zim, Lulu Gonsana. Great people and great musicians. And of course, the film couldn't capture that because it was made in 2019. But what the film does, on the other hand, is it emphasizes the historical timeline of what was happening in South Africa and how introducing the jazz course was really much more than that. You know, as I said earlier, and I don't ever want to sound boastful. I don't want to be one of these people who, you know, decades later claim to be a great freedom fighter. I wasn't that. I was just doing what I was good at, or trying to be good at, you know, which was being simultaneously an artist and an academic.
Mm.
And my wife is good at being a manager and organizer. And we just focused. These are the talents we have developed. We develop them elsewhere. We'll bring them to South Africa. Let's see if we can have an impact. And because of so many wonderful people who supported us.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, not because of us alone at all, because of very smart, forward-looking academics on campus, because of the openness and eagerness of South African musicians. You know, they could have rejected me as a foreign person. You know, what am I doing there? Am I there to help, or am I there to exploit the situation? You know, it was reasonable to have questions at first. But we had so much warmth and support from everybody involved. And I think that does come through both in the film and the book.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love that. And of course, Anaka, we look forward to it. I think seeing it in action, seeing it in motion, as I always say. And I really want to leave it here, you know, so that we leave a little bit more for our listeners to follow on the trail and come out and watch, you know, the film. And maybe even, are we going to have copies of the book available? Because I know people online have been saying they've been struggling to get the copy. Are we going to have copies reprinted? What's the word on that?
Oh, well, that is up to the UKZN Press. They are our publisher in South Africa. There's also an international edition that's published by the University of Illinois Press. But the first edition came out a year ago. It was in May 2023 from the UKZN Press.
Mm.
And they had the... You know, anything you do as an entrepreneur, as a press or a record company or something, is a risk. So, you know, we have to honor that and hope that they'll get their money back from a South African audience, since they're based in South Africa.
But as we wrap up you and I's conversation, our time is fast spent. We look forward to, you know, seeing you at the festivals. Hopefully you come down and we be part of the bigger conversation and we reflect on this documentary, this wonderful documentary. And thank you so much once again for preserving, you know, this art form, for breathing life into, you know, a wonderful past, and so that we can relive it. Those of us who were born much later anyway, we can relive it and be part of those moments, of course, yeah, on the KJAZZ show. Mr. Brubeck, thank you so much for joining us.
Okay, Nkako, thank you.
Absolutely. He is a jazz pianist, composer, and author. And he is Mr. Darius Brubeck on the KJAZZ show.